Welcome to Culture, Talent, and Growth. Join Anish Shah and the Ruckus team as they invite dynamic leaders to share what they've learned about creating lasting culture, attracting great talent, and achieving sustainable growth. Let's get started.
My name is Anish. I'm the CEO of Bring Ruckus. My background was running growth for companies, and now I run an executive recruiting firm. Generally, our bread and butter is hiring everyone's kind of head of marketing and head of growth. And I'm here today with Mike Smith, the CEO of Dovetail, who's had a pretty interesting background. So I get to learn a little bit about kind of like the ups and downs of the music industry last time I chatted with him. So would love if you can actually walk me through some of that background and then how that, you know, for lack of a better word, dovetailed into starting like an influencer marketing software company.
Everyone makes that pun, so
it's terrible. Sorry.
I wanna turn it into a t-shirt at this point. So my name is Mike Schmidt. I started this company called Listen way back in the day, but my entrepreneurial journey was sort of by accident. It's sort of an eclectic path. I think, you know, the way I got to Listen and then, you know, to Dovetail is sort of very logical after that. So I studied chemical engineering in college and really loved the math and sciences behind that stuff. I still tell everyone around me, a lot of my close friends, that I'm going to kind of open up that can of worms again someday when I, you know, make a bunch of money from the Dovetail journey. I'm going to probably go broke on some new space age tech company or something like that. Like that's kind of like the dream. But in the meantime, I'm really excited about just like the things we're building. And the journey is sort of, it sort of started back in college. I did a program, like a very entrepreneurial program that sort of changed my world from wanting to become, you know, a PhD student or a medical doctor. And then I wanted to really kind of like open up this opportunity in Silicon Valley or, you know, building a company. I was sort of obsessed with it after I did this like incubator program called the Next 36. So I really got like excited about starting companies. I started a company actually predating Listen, which was called Poster Board. And the company was sort of like a citizen journalism app. So I always liked sort of like the communication between people that didn't necessarily know each other. And that didn't really take off by any means. It was sort of just like a project that we worked on, a bunch of people that didn't know what they were doing. But I was hooked. I sort of just like this idea of building a company. Fast forward to my last year of college, and I found a group of people that also wanted to not do the traditional route. So back in Canada, building a company in your dorm room wasn't really like a thing. Like there was no like Stanford like narrative built around it. People were like, oh, you're going to go work at Goldman. If you get in the top of your class, you're going to work at McKinsey or something like that. So that was pretty much like where most of my friends were headed or going or thinking about business school, that type of thing. And I found these group of guys that were just like, yeah, we want to build stuff. We want to learn more about comp sci. We want to build an app. So short story long is I basically built this app called Listen, which was basically a digital music service that allowed you to share music with your friends or followers or whatever else it was. We had the follow model sort of built into the app. So Spotify hadn't come to Canada yet. And we were like, we're going to build, you know, the next big thing in music when it comes to sharing music digitally. So Listen got pretty, I mean, it was the biggest thing I'd ever worked on at the time. We had probably like 10,000 daily active users when we first launched. We were just like really excited about that project. So a lot of stuff happened in between that time, but I started Dovetail after we sold the Listen company. And I was sort of just like obsessed with this idea that Google really wasn't doing a great job of indexing publishers on the web. And we wanted to do just a better job of indexing publishers on social media because the web and social media sort of had kind of converged in the early like 2010s, especially with like, you know, Justin TV turned into Twitch and Vine was like coming out pretty strong. Instagram was growing really, really quickly. Snapchat was getting on the scene and like this new publisher had sort of taken shape. So we were really excited about like building everything that Google had sort of missed on social media. So again, they did a really good job of doing search on traditional web pages within traditional publishing, but they did not so great of a job and still don't really index that well social pages on Instagram or YouTube or any of the other kind of emerging networks. So Dovetail sort of surfaced to solve the problem of search. And if Google had PageRank, we would have like a social ranking system. And that's sort of what got it started.
Would you feel like the social platforms actually want a lot of their data and indexed? you know, I could see pros and cons of that. One, the pro being obviously that they'll get more traffic from SEO, but number two, the con, it's kind of taking it out of the walled garden, and also like privacy, like someone posts something on Facebook, they didn't expect it to be like indexed on an SEO. Yeah, I'm super curious about that.
So I think that like the social networks want to control as much of this experience as they possibly can. Like, I don't think that, I think it's sort of inevitable the way this sort of story ends for the creators. Like, Instagram still doesn't support creators from a monetary stance until recently, right? Like, now they've just started to like open up roles in the company to like support monetary relationships with creators. YouTube has actually done an incredible job of just like supporting creators. And that's why you see like influencer marketing being like one of the number one channels like on YouTube. And it's also why you see a lot more creator friendly actions from the CEO, employees, that type of thing. But to answer your question like succinctly, the networks, these channels, YouTube, Twitch, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, they want to own as much of these creator relationships as they possibly can. So as far as like opening data goes, it's like, they actually don't control like the creator's data. That when you sign up to those platforms, those creators own that data, right? So it's like, they just are sort of like harborers of data. So they just store it, and basically those creators can delete that data just as you can as a user. And you're sort of just like giving them access to all these things. So I think it's sort of an inevitable feature that comes out where search databases come out and they say like, oh, we want to help people discover more people. Cause like the gig economy is thriving right now with creators especially. So I think eventually, you know, they're going to have to be much more friendly with companies that want to enable creative contracting, especially like influencer marketing, especially like these other kind of forms of marketing. But if it were up to them, I think like they would control the experience. It's just a very tough experience to control. So
Makes sense. Yeah. Overall, very complex answer, but mostly they like the fact that they have ownership over all of their data, all of the content and all of the community and users, right?
Yeah, exactly. So like we imagine a future where, you know, creators fully can provision their data from one system to the next. And it's almost just like a data wallet or a passport that can like communicate between different applications. And Instagram would be one of those apps. And then maybe Dovetail would be another one of those apps and like a bunch of other things. That's already starting to happen with like the Apple ID process where you can sign in and authenticate. So it's already starting to happen where data provisioning and affordability is starting to come to life.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And so you started talking about how Dovetail was started partially because of your interest, the fact that the content was not being indexed particularly well from the search engines, mainly content that was being created every day on the major social media platforms.
Yeah. That story still is like relevant to this day. It's like, if we can help creators get work, if we can help them find brands to work with or any of those types of things, I think that's a win for us. So like we want to be the place where brands, agencies alike start their process. Now as the company's like evolving much more into like a suite of tools, we want to be a sort of this like relationship management layer for all those relationships as well. So as Salesforce has been sort of this like this really great tool for relationship management across your customers or sales prospects or those types of things, there are specific features that you need to engage creatives. And, you know, from a recruiting standpoint, from an engagement standpoint, there's a whole bunch of different things, but search is sort of where it started and still where we spend a considerable amount of our time. And I think that's where we also have a pretty big competitive advantage compared to a lot of the legacy players in the space.
Nice. So if you're feeling like other companies who are trying to be that kind of influencer CRM tool, your sort of unfair advantage is you're just much better at indexing all the content and data out there on all the influencers and the content they're creating.
Yeah, I think both from like a usability perspective and then also from a scale perspective, we like early days, Google was like, they would publish how many pages they would index right at the bottom of their search. They'd be like, we've indexed 11 billion pages or whatever else it was. And then they would go directly up against Yahoo or, you know, the other search engines to kind of show the scale and the breadth and depth of their networks. So we kind of do the same. We just show like the scale in Dovetail. And then, you know, if we're going up against like a sales pitch, it's hard to compare today because we're, you know, compared to like Google or something, because Google's free product, consumer oriented, and then Dovetail is paid. So you have to pay like a minimum of $99 to get into it. And it's very specific. It's a very vertically specific search engine. But yeah, we definitely compete pretty easily on just like that search product. and building out like the best experience when it comes to data indexing.
Nice. So getting into like how to properly kind of work with influencers and work with platforms, a lot of the growth marketers I talk to who are starting to get into it feel pretty overwhelmed and don't really know where to start. Basically, like, do they just start DMing people on Instagram and asking them if they want to work with them? Do they just plan out a creative brief and then shoot it out to a bunch of agencies and have them just deal with it because they don't want to? Like, where should someone start when they're just saying, hey, we've got a little bit of budget, we just raised some money, where should I go for influencer from like day one?
This is a pretty common problem across like most of the customers we deal with. It's just sort of, it's a very haphazard layer of marketing. So first off, if there's like people watching this that have gone through this is sort of like the normal first step, especially because it's just so easy to upload creative to Facebook and then push a button and then you can hit an audience. With influencer, it's a whole layer of like convolution that still has, like, even Dovetail, no company out there has solved today. Like, we still have so much to do to like solve the intricacies of relationship management and recruiting and finding the right people and like all that kind of stuff. But where you generally start as a brand, so say, for example, I'm like a brand new direct consumer brand. I just launched my company on Shopify. I have no sales. Probably influencer marketing is not the place for you. That's just the reality. You should probably focus on A, building an incredible product, B, building a great supply chain, C, like focusing on your distribution. And then I think it's like community development through your like influencer advocacy programs or affiliate programs and those types of things. That being said, there are like celebrity created brands, right? So, and that's becoming very, very interesting now, right? Like John Wexler, the co-creator of the Yeezys with Kanye, who just got hired by Shopify, right? So like you can tell Shopify is going to go into this direction of creating celebrity brands and creator driven brands and those types of things. So if you're in that category, you're in like a whole different thing because you have a constituent user base that will just like buy because you are an influencer and you'll anything you say, they'll do. So I would say like, if you are experimenting with like influencer marketing near the beginning of your journey, it's probably like you need to know a little bit more about your customer before you end up like spending money on influencers. Now, let's say, for example, you're like 100 days in or like 150 days in and you have some sales, you know who your customers are, you have a good idea. You can definitely use tools like Dovetail to find the influencers that match your audience. So like the people that will purchase from you. So like the 25 to 30 year old, the person that's into fitness, the person that has like a French bulldog, the person that has this, this, and this, all these types of archetypes. I think like that's probably the best method is like have a little bit of data, have a little bit of information before you end up going and reaching out to people. And then you can do pretty much the standard process, reach out to people, tell people, like build ambassador programs, all these types of things. You should have equally as much time spent on reaching out to people as you're spending on recruiting people through just like application portals and those types of things. So this is a very multifaceted answer, but that's probably my shortest answer for like where to start. And then depending on the complexity of the products and depending on the sophistication of the marketing team, I can kind of take your next set of questions in whatever direction.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for that, by the way. Thanks for the honesty there that, you know, hey, maybe we're not the best one for the best option from at day zero when someone just raised their first million, but, you know, maybe about 100 days later, then come and look at us. Whereas I think a lot of agencies and vendors would just say, of course, yeah, we'll figure it out. Just come sign with us. With the clients you work with, do you see behind the curtain in terms of how the performance is from influencer marketing campaigns versus other stuff like paid social and like where it converges and areas where it's just like completely different and they have to think about it completely different from a return on an unspend kind of perspective? I'd love to learn more about that.
Yeah, from like a conversion standpoint, comparing it to paid social or paid media, the tough part with influencer marketing in the first place is just like, how do you track it? Like every single time I jump on the phone now with customers, I'm like, what is the metric that you're using to determine success or not? And like, how can we help you get to that metric? Because, you know, we're not an agency, right? We're just a tool. Like I'm just trying to help you through this process, through this like mini sales / consulting experience that we're going through when you reach out to us. But like, as far as like measurement compared to other channels, what I see work really well, especially for like direct consumer brands, is like codes and affiliates, specifically on YouTube and on blogs. Instagram is sort of like, you have to be within the crosshairs of a very specific company to do well with codes and affiliates. just because like link in bio and stuff like that's getting a little fatigued. And then I think like the codes are helpful, but only for like brands that kind of engage those influencers and say, hey, put like your ambassador code in your bio. And then I think people feel a little bit more authentically connected to their fans and customers or future customers in this case. So like we see a lot of this data. I mean, I was just checking some of the dashboards today for Dovetail because we just have so many clients now that we see like sort of this like God's eye view of everything that's going on. We're making a big play for affiliates right now. Like we see that's where a lot of the things are going for direct to consumer. For larger companies like Samsung or Uber or Porsche, like those types of companies that we work with, they're looking for like brand lift. Traditionally, just like, hey, how many more followers did I get? Can I compare that against my multimedia data sets? My mixed media models, like Target has like a huge mixed media model and P&G and like other companies do as well. And I would say like, it really depends on what you're looking at. It's hard to compare against paid social because if you're not like a super organized, coordinated team, there's no way you will get the scale of Facebook ads or Instagram ads by just like pressing a button and like controlling it on the back end. So I would say like, if you're comparing it one-to-one, influencer will lose every time or like most of the time. But then again, like for some direct to consumer brands, like we work with, there's some really, really good examples of them doing like amazing influencer marketing campaigns. And they've removed their entire paid social budgets because they've exhausted their audiences on Facebook and Instagram. So like getting new authenticity layers into the organization, touching more points for consumers is like kind of where we see things going. And like, you need to have someone on your team that's a little bit more sophisticated than the average bear when doing like affiliate marketing or influencer marketing. So I know it's kind of long-winded, but just having context around people's programs, like marketing programs, I think is just a little bit more important because we fall in a very specific sweet spot where companies are like, we know that influencer works for us. And like, we're just going to like iterate on this process. So
interesting. So they've already kind of decided that influencer is a major strategic kind of portion of their budget. Once they've come to you and they're not coming to you saying like, well, we don't really know if it's going to work. So we're just going to have this tiny experimental budget, but using your tool, it better work or else we're not going to like renew our subscriptions.
Yeah. When those kind of companies come to us, we want to help them as much as possible. We just launched our blog to kind of like help people and educate. Ultimately, like I'm just really honest, like in our sales team is very honest with people. We call it like the anti-sell. And it's just basically like, guys, like, you know, you should kind of be thinking about these problems right now and like come back to us in 30 days or in 40 days, whenever you've got like this and this kind of set up, because we don't want you paying for a platform that's not going to turn out to be successful for you. So that's kind of the mindset internally. And like the faster we grow, the more we'll be able to build. And like the easier it will be to kind of walk clients through those processes. Cause like we have several new features coming out pretty soon that are just going to like basically do that for the young company that hasn't really done influencer marketing before. But today, if you're new to it and like, you're like, oh, I'm like experimenting, this is like 3% of our marketing budget. I'm like, use an agency because they know what they're doing. And you're just going to get honestly very frustrated and you're just going to get mad at me in like 60 days. So,
okay. Awesome. Thanks for running through that with me. And yeah, that honesty in the sales process is so impressive to that client that's coming to you, right?
Yeah.
We've noticed that as well. And like where you specifically say, hey, we actually don't want your money right now. I mean, it's nice, we'll take it. But like realistically, if I was sitting in your shoes, I would come back to us in 3 months, you know, when you're ready, when you have your ducks in a row. And we also set people up with like consultants in the meanwhile, kind of like you say, go to an agency. We kind of turn around this sheet we have, not exactly a sheet, but sort of a deck we have of like, here's 20 people that you should talk to right now to get you set up over the next 3 months to get you ready to move forward in place to work with us. But we'll wish you well and circle back with you in a few months, see how you're doing. It's because so many people deal with agency kind of wonks who are just trying to sell them anything and will say yes to anything. Yeah, that trust is so huge. Are you able to see a lot of the campaigns that are going out the door and kind of get to see like, were there any kind of campaigns that kind of blew you away in terms of either performance or creativity or really thinking out of the box? I'd love to learn if you're able to talk to any of them. I don't know if there's like certain NDAs that you can't, you know, give details about certain campaigns that are happening like sort of behind the scenes, but any ones that you can speak to, I'd love to learn more about them.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to talk about specific campaigns because I know like a lot of marketing teams like to kind of keep that close to the chest. and talk about like some brands that have just like done a really impressive job. And I think the word that I'm thinking about right now when it comes to like just their success is it's not necessarily like blow away creative. It's not necessarily like, you know, some crazy insight that they have or whatever else it is. It's just like their teams have a lot of discipline and they are just very consistent in the way that they do things. The three teams I'm thinking about right now, number one is Curology. It's like an acne repair brand with a coaching assistant. Bravo Sierra, which is like an online fitness brand, and this company called Control Freak. They're really, really cool companies. Like Control Freak is a performance gaming thumbstick, basically like to enhance like gaming on Xbox or on Nintendo Switch or something like that. And I think their teams are just like super disciplined. They're very honest. They're very nice. You can get a long way, by the way, by treating like, you know, support teams as humans and basically, you know, just like, I know that the teams that engage with us, they're a little nasty on support and like, you know, we're still a small team. Like we hear of everything that goes on. And I think like these three teams have just been just like incredible. I talk to their marketing teams pretty frequently, just trying to like help them personally, because I like want to see them be successful. I mean, Curology's raised like $20 million now. You know, the other two companies are doing extremely well financially. And the secret to their success with influencer is just they're very disciplined. So they're just constantly reaching out to, like they set metrics. They're like, and again, like there's probably thousands of other companies that do this, but like they set metrics. They're like, this week we're going to reach out to 25 people per day, or this week we're going to reach out to 10 people per day. We're expecting a response rate of 10%. That means we're going to get to these numbers. If two or three people do it, that means we're going to get to this scale. From there, we're going to set up these people with coupon codes. From there, we're going to track the affiliate commissions from that, and we're going to generate X amount of sales. Again, it's not rocket science. Like none of the things that you and I do on a day-to-day basis are rocket science. It's just, you know, helping people with process and discipline. And I think like the Dovetail tools really help people kind of like create process and like learn through action, especially because it is a digital product and can be scaled. Like, I mean, we have companies in like Mexico to Singapore to Japan to like Central Europe. Like your tools have to be like super easy to use. And I think like these guys have just like basically just done it. They've done it super, super well. So as far as like the campaigns goes, there's probably like the talent they've selected or just spent a lot of time like making sure the talent is good. That's like one staple. Second is just like kind of giving control and freedom to those influencers and letting them drive sales and conversions the way that they think their audience will like, you know, the content. Because I know like when companies go to Twitch or when companies go to Instagram, the content's going to be very different. And if the marketing manager has never done a live stream on Twitch, how are they going to know what works and what doesn't work? Right. So it's like, I think that there's a lot of trust between these teams and their influencers. And I think like there's some obviously like crazy examples of influencer marketing that have worked really well, like David Dobrik and the Tesla stuff that he does. But like, I just want to highlight those companies because like probably no one, like some people probably know about like Curology, but you know, some of the other brands maybe don't know about because they're probably not in those spaces or, but be just because like they're kind of up and comers or whatever else it is, but like any brand can do it. They just have to be disciplined with this kind of thing. And they do very extremely well with like sales and brand lift. So they crush it on all those metrics.
Yeah. Yeah. Curology is amazing. And we had Fabian in an event a few weeks ago and they invested in influencer really early and pretty heavily, having multiple team members on the marketing side who were just dedicated to influencer. Sounds like it's really paid off for them. So it's so fascinating that the word you use over and over again was discipline, which is not considered a corollary to creative marketing. You know, can you dive into that a little bit more? Like, what does discipline mean in your mind? Because I've frankly not heard that being sort of like the hallmark of being successful and in kind of the more creative side of marketing.
I think it's so easy to get sort of frustrated with influencer marketing. And when it happens, it happens. Like I've heard this many times. There's sort of this like this moment in the marketing team where like, we figured it out. We figured out influencer marketing. And I think some brands are just never going to be successful with influencer marketing. And that's just because probably their product doesn't hit heartstring or something else like that at scale. I'm of the personal belief that you could probably build any product and you could sell it to anybody just because there's so many humans on earth that are connected through the internet. But I think like in general, if you're looking at influencer marketing to achieve scale in your sales org or in your marketing org or whatever else it is, like not many teams ask themselves like the fundamental questions. Like maybe this is just like the engineer in me, but I'm like, what am I measuring? Like, what does success look like to me? What is like the next week look like to me? And then just being like very organized and just like having that discipline and saying, if this didn't work, okay, cool. I'm going to go through the engineering process once again and think about like, what are the other things that I could tweak in the system to become successful in whatever I'm doing? I mean, I think that mindset and that process really helps you throughout pretty much anything that you're trying to do in problem solving. But like, you have a hypothesis, you try to prove your hypothesis through the null hypothesis, and then you basically like iterate until you find the answer. Right. I think like these teams have inherently done that. And I think the teams that truly, truly scale these types of programs, not even just influencer marketing, but like, I think the turnover of CMOs in like Fortune 500s is also because of this too. Like, I think CMO is like the highest turnover C-level role in Fortune 500s. And yes. I could probably guess it's just because of not measuring things correctly or making poor decisions based on gut feeling versus data. And the teams that just do it well, they just measure stuff.
I like that. I was going to ask you as my next question, you know, and my closing question, you know, what's the biggest piece of advice you'd give to someone kind of jumping into this? But I think you've already dove into that pretty aggressively with the last few minutes. That discipline is really what drives a lot of success here. Not just coming up with the craziest, wildest, most experimental idea. It's planning, strategy, all of that stuff, which maybe some people take for granted and don't think should apply to experimental channels like influencer.
Yeah, I'd say like also too, just on some advice when you're kind of going into this influencer space is like, you don't need Dovetail. You don't need our competitors. You don't need that stuff to do influencer marketing. Like, that's not me trying to like anti-sell you. That's like just me being honest. Like, you don't need like a platform to go out there and like reach out to people and do all this other stuff. You can just reach out to people or put in your bio on Instagram or something and or run an ad being like, I'm running an ambassador program or something like that. Like, tools like Dovetail are to help you scale. Once you figure that stuff out, then you can go out and scale. Like, there's no way you're going to be tracking like affiliate code links and like reaching out to like 400 people per week on your own. Like, you definitely need Dovetail or one of our competitors to do that. But like early on, don't feel like you need to invest in something like Dovetail to get started at influencer marketing. Like, the creators are great people. And as long as you get in touch with people in the right ways, the most authentic ways, like we have a cold email strategy blog post that one of our team members just wrote. Just take a look, just take a peek. Like, all these companies that we compete with too have all these resources that are out there that are free. So start there and then, you know, build relationships. And then just my honest advice is just be nice to people and then be nice and work hard. And then you'll just get to where you want to be.
I love that. And yeah, it's not terribly dissimilar to recruiting. The best reason why someone wants to hire us is because they've started to do their recruiting themselves. And then 2 to 3 months pass and they just haven't gotten the volume, quality, quantity, whatever it is that they're looking for. And they realize they need an external resource to help them out. I think with you guys, and I think it's best for us that someone has gone at it a little bit on their own, because they'll come with some of that information in terms of what they like, what they don't like, what types of candidates and profiles work for them.
Yeah.
Going at something without the right resources and all of the resources and all of the best software and strategy at your fingertips is actually great. And then upgrade to working with someone like yourself or myself when you're sort of at that later stage.
We're in the same boat.
For sure. Cool. Well, thanks for jumping on the line with me here. I was excited to chat with you last time, and I think this was a pretty fun chat too. And I think whoever ends up giving it a listen will walk away with some pretty good advice.
Thanks for tuning in to Culture, Talent, and Growth. If you found value in this conversation, please leave a review, subscribe, and share this episode with a friend. You can visit bringruckus.com for more ways to connect. And remember, new episodes come out on Tuesday.